local media has an agenda that they're going to serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards. Yeah. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those are
running in circles.
Just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
The Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star. So care about
by your speakers. Anybody else have any interesting stories they don't want to come to tell?
This is Doug from After the Fall. Hey, this is John Lane from the Thriving Tropics of Leechburg, Pennsylvania.
The Pennsylvania Rock Show. Featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer.
Hey, it's Bill, and you're tuned into the Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock and metal that Pennsylvania has to offer, right here on PARockShow.com, MegaRockRadio.net, 107.1 FM St. Louis, Missouri, RootyRootRadio.com, XRPRadio.co.uk, AltRockRadio.ca. This is episode number 495, and with me tonight is Mick Michaels from the band Corners of Sanctuary. What's up, Mick?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on.
I'm doing well. Thanks for jumping on quickly for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I was looking at your bio, and we'll get into that a little bit later. I have to open with that first question that I always open with, and that's where did the band name Corners of Sanctuary come from?
It has a couple different meanings, actually, that have a related meaning, but a corner of sanctuary to us is a place that people can go, an individual can go to be who they are inside without judgment or ridicule from an outside source of any kind. It could be anything. It could be reading a book. It could be working in your garden. It could be exercising. It's anything. For us, corner of sanctuary is the music that we do. It's playing music, creating music, and then sharing that music. So we thought that that'd be kind of a neat thing, an extension of ourselves in the music, that since music is a corner of sanctuary for us, that maybe our music could be a corner of sanctuary to somebody else. On the flip side of that, a corner of sanctuary in terms of like boxing or some kind of fighting style is an area that you can go or a position that you can take that your opponent can't reach you or hit you, but you can hit them. So in some cases, if depending on how you look at it, they're both safe areas, whether it's how you feel or if, you know, God forbid, you're in a confrontational, physical confrontation. So that's kind of the root of the meaning of our name.
That's not like listening to the music. That's not what I thought.
Okay.
I wasn't looking for a place of safety to be the answer. That's really cool. So I was just watching your video for Hail Hail.
Yes.
And my question about that video is, where was that video recorded? Because that backdrop is like perfect for that song.
Yeah, that was filmed in Hanover, Germany. Last year, we did a 10-day tour that included dates in Germany and Belgium, Netherlands. And we had it was a Thursday that we actually had off. It was a travel day, but we also had a window of time that we were told that if we can get it to work, we can film a video while we're there. So we got together and we did a guerrilla shoot. And that is the location in Hanover where they held the 2000 World Fair. So they had all these leftover structures that were there, and we really thought it was cool, and graffiti just covered everything, and it really brought an element to it. It was real bright, and it was a beautiful day, super sunny, and you could see some of the structures in the back that were still standing. There's actually an IKEA off to the side that they had built, but the rest of the grounds just kind of, you know, overgrown and stuff. They haven't done anything with it since then. So we thought that was an awesome opportunity to do a guerrilla shoot, in a place that we had just played the night before, with a song that, you know, the album had just released in CD format while we were on tour. So it was kind of like, you know, everything aligned. So yeah, we had a great time doing that.
IKEA makes me think of the Dollar Generals on this side of the state. They're everywhere.
Yeah, they're everywhere. It was a giant IKEA. I mean, it was massive. I've never seen one this. It was just crazy. But yeah.
So I was looking over your personal bio, and I see you're endorsed by like like 20 maybe different companies. You want to throw any of those out?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've some of them are endorsements, some of them are sponsors, they're supporters of, you know, what we're doing, as a band. But yeah, we have Coffin Case. They've really helped us out, especially with the travel, and, you know, stuff that bring our guitars around and some stick bags and stuff like that. So we have, Sinister Guitar Picks, been using them for a number of years now. I got a special blend that kind of seems to work really well, because I've always had a tendency to be heavy with my picks, and they get all bent up real quick, and I lose kind of they bend so much because of the way I play that I can't sometimes play right. So they got me hooked up with a pick that works really well. It seems to fit my style of playing. We have GSH Strings as an endorsement. They're phenomenal strings. We were using them back in the 80s, so we're excited about that. We got Metal Babe Mayhem. They help us out with some of our clothing. Our drummers have some stuff, but you know, there's. I mean, I know we're with Cole Cock. We have some other apparel companies and all. So we're real appreciative of their support. You know, and the thing with endorsements is it goes hand in hand. You can't just have an endorsement and not do anything with it. One, you have to use their product. And we only use products that we've already been using, we try to connect with. But we show support by, you know, linking them with our stuff and using, the name recognition for both the band and them. And so that it's kind of like a symbiont. We're helping each other out at the same time. So you have to prove your worth as well. And it's rightly so, you know what I mean? They're taking a chance on what you're doing, supporting what you're doing, and you want to reciprocate, and it's a good, respectful way to do that by including them in what you do.
The Sinister Guitar Picks that you mentioned, there's a band not far from here that I've been involved with for a long time. They were the first band that I ever designed a website for, which is what eventually turned into the show. And their guitarist is his name's Zach Shepard, and he is endorsed by Sinister as well.
Yeah, they're a great company. Great company.
I think we'll play some After the Fall tonight since it came up.
Awesome.
Looking at your band's bio, you guys have played with a lot of well-known bands, and you've been all over the place, and I see that you're getting airplay in Australia and UK and obviously Germany. How as a unsigned band from Philly, well, signed on some smaller labels, but sure, how do you get to that point?
It's, you know, it's like anything else. We consider ourselves, we're kind of an in the trench band, and we're doing what every other artist is trying to do. And we're working at it all the time, and we don't just rely on one outlet. We keep our hand in the mix. We're constantly working. We're writing new material. We're releasing material. It's not always albums. Sometimes it's singles. Sometimes it's EPs. Sometimes it's you know, it is albums, or we get part of compilations, or we lend our music to something. We're out there playing shows, and we try to travel around bringing the music to the people. Because at the end of the day, I mean, it you can do a lot digitally now, you know, online and stuff like that. But to get that connection that you want to get with an audience, you got to get out there and play. I mean, that's kind of the excitement, getting up on stage and playing the music, you know, sharing it with whoever comes out to see you. We've been very fortunate to to have people that are interested enough to want to listen to us at different parts of the world. And again, going back to, you know, with the way the digital technology is today and the social media and the internet, I mean, it is possible more so than back in the 80s. Being from Philly, you could take like 3 months to get a tape to Jersey. And let alone somebody to listen to it. So it's an amazing time. One of the downfalls of it is there's so much competition now, more so than it's ever been. And it's important for a band to be in the trenches and know what's going on and try to make as much effort as they can to get the music out there and share it with people. So it's, again, like I said, we've been fortunate to play with a lot of different people, working our tail off to achieve some of those shows and put on a show, you know, good play music, that people enjoy, you know, and just keep at it, have fun with it. We definitely enjoy what we do. We love writing music. We love playing our style of traditional heavy metal, which is a niche market to begin with. You know, it's not a mainstream type of thing. So given that, we have to work a little harder. We really have to stay at it as much as we can, because you can get lost in the shuffle very quickly and forgotten about, unfortunately. So we do our best to keep our finger on the pulse, so to say, our pulse, so we know we're still alive.
I saw that you're in the process of booking a tour in the United Kingdom. And
yes.
And my question is, if I was to tag along on that tour on those off days where you're not recording gorilla videos,
right?
What would the soundtrack for the tour be? So when we're in the buses or however you're going to travel, what would we be listening to?
Music-wise, well,
yes.
Our bass player James is real finicky about music being played while we're, you know, because we'll all travel together. So he's a fantastic guy, and I've been playing with James since '85. So we're like brothers. So I kind of know what to expect, but he likes to be able to pick the music and control the music. We can listen to Pink Floyd, we'll listen to Neil Diamond, we'll listen to ZZ Top, we'll listen to Accept, Judas Priest, Dio, you know, things like that, Black Sabbath. And then he sometimes just kind of picks different things, different genres. He likes a whole mix of stuff, which is kind of cool because we kind of as well. You know, so it's not like we just say, oh, can only listen to one thing. I kind of do like the diversity myself. This way we're musicians that like a lot of different music other than just metal. Cause we grew up, on a variety of stuff. In my family growing up, my father was a huge Beatles fan. But he was also a doo-wop fan. So I heard a lot of that growing up. Big Bopper and stuff like that, Jimmy Valance. But on my mother's side, my uncle was way into Motown. So I grew up with a lot of that as well. So there was a lot of variety of music. And James, whose family was relatively close in proximity to where my family came from, there was a lot of crossover with the music. So a lot of that generation was listening to similar music. So he was familiar with a lot of the stuff that I grew up with as I was with him. And then, you know, he got into AC/DC as a kid. I got into Judas Priest, Kiss as a kid in the late 70s and all that. So there was a lot of crossover with that. So that's kind of, so you'll hear a lot of that. The one tour we did a Midwest tour. We did like 14 hours of Kiss. He was about to strangle the heck out of us. But we were just rolling one album after another.
What do you think the best Kiss album is?
I think with Makeup, with the original lineup, I love Rock and Roll Over as a studio album. And I know that, you know, Ace Frehley didn't play all the guitars on that, supposedly. But that's definitely probably one of the best albums that I'll go back to. There's a lot of feeling to that album. There's a lot of emotion to that album. Not exactly sure why that happened like that. I guess I think Eddie Kramer was on that worked on that album, so I think that was probably part of it. So I'm a big Destroyer fan too, but
that one's mine.
Yeah. So it's back. It's definitely back and forth. And their non-makeup album, in my opinion, I think Animalized is their best non-makeup album.
I can't, like, Kiss, especially on this show when it comes up, is very hit or miss. Either the band really likes them or they don't want to talk about them at all.
I get it. I'm a big Kiss fan. I can talk about them. From the solo albums, to my liking, Paul Stanley has the best album. I know there's a big debate over Aces and all that, yeah. but I think, I mean, Aces is an okay rock album. I like Paul Stanley's voice a lot better. I like his writing style. It definitely was a lot more passion involved, and it was more theme oriented. Like there was continuity to it. Where Ace's album, there was variety in it. A lot of a collection of rock songs in a way. Some, in my opinion, better than others. But I like that album as well. But I go with Paul's first.
I have to say, I would thoroughly enjoy traveling with you guys because you didn't mention any bands that I don't like.
That's cool. That's cool.
Let's do a little bit of time traveling now.
Sure.
If you could go back to any year and follow any band around and learn from that band without changing history, what band would you want to follow and why?
Wow.
See, now we're getting to those questions I mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I think that my favorite all time album, if I could get to that point, would be, it's Stay in Class from Judas Priest, which I think is 78. So I would like to be, there's those three albums that Judas Priest did. They did Killing Machine, which was called Hellbent for Leather here in the States. And then, Stay in Class, or the other way around. I can't remember what the hell it was. And then, Unleashed in the East. Those three albums that had Les Binks, the drummer, on it, to me, are the classic Judas Priest. Is when they were making, like, the big change. Before then, they went and changed again, but everything was pulling together. And I think during that 78 into 79, I think I would have liked to tour with them or be with them to see how they were coming up with some of these ideas in terms of the experimental guitar sounds and the contrasting and complementing guitar riffs that KK and Glenn were doing. And then at that point, Rob Halford's voice was just phenomenal. If you look at footage from Staying Class, before they made that change to the black leather and all, they were still kind of like in the loose kind of hippie like type clothing. How did that change happen? What was permeating to make it happen? I know in reading KK's book, there was a lot of his influence in there. He was trying to get everything pulled together, but I think that would have been an interesting time to see how this was all coming together and learning from that, because really by that change that they made going, they really defined the look of what heavy metal was becoming, at least in that early stage as new wave of heavy metal was starting to break out. And it
still now, I mean, you can see the references everywhere.
So that would be the time for sure.
Let's stick with time traveling a little bit, sort of.
Sure.
If you could sit on a bench and speak with any musician from the history of time, who would you want to talk to and what would you want to ask them about?
Wow, that's an incredible question. I think with a lot of metalheads, I think one of the obvious choices that people come right off the bat would be, I'd like to talk to Dio or maybe even Randy Rose or something like that, and see where he was thinking 5, 6, 10 years down the line, because I think metal would have been slightly different if he did get a chance to continue on. But I think, and this is probably coming in left field to some metalheads, but I think I would like to sit down and talk with Michael Jackson for a while. I mean, one, I think he was an incredible melody maker. He was a dynamite songwriter. And there's a lot, and I think there's a lot that all songwriters can learn from a variety of musicians, and not just within their own genre. But I think that there was something that he just had this connection to the music and all. Listen, outside of all that other stuff that's associated with Michael Jackson and what people feel or say he did and didn't do, I'm talking strictly on the artistic end about making music. You talk about time travel. I'd like to see how that Thriller album came together, like being a fly on the wall and be into those sessions with him and Quincy Jones and the musicians that he was working with. And it would have been a heck of a time. What time would have been watching him bring Eddie Van Halen into the studio at that time, mm-hmm. and have him, you know, create this, his sound with, you know, a mainstream radio hit. I mean, to me, that's the ultimate.
I owned that on cassette. Update myself a little bit.
Yeah, no, I had it too on cassette. My sister had it on album for sure. So, you know, I mean, at that time, you know, 82, 83, 84, I mean, the majority of people, and regardless of, there was some type of Michael Jackson influence happening worldwide. You couldn't avoid it.
I also had a sparkly glove.
That's cool. I've
come a long way.
I seen the when him and his brothers came to JFK in Philly. I was at that show. One of, I think he did five of them, four or five of them. I was at one of them. I can't remember which one, but it was a pretty cool show, man.
So let's stick with my odd line of questioning for a little bit.
Sure.
If you could take an album that you absolutely love and erase it from your memory so that you can hear it for the first time again, what album would you want to hear for the first time and get that initial wow factor again?
Wow. Well, if I go back again to, like, I think my all-time favorite album, the Stained Glass by Judas Priest, the song that sticks out the most for me that I have loved from the very first time, I mean, it just took me, was Beyond the Realms of Death. So if I could hear, I mean, I hear it now and I get goosebumps during the lead every time. It's not a shredding lead. He's not like ripping through this and that, you know, the whole Malmsteen thing and all. It's a very melody based lead, but there's a lot of feeling and a lot of emotion in there. And the same part every time, I get the, like, just right before the changeover back into the verse at the end of that lead, it just gets me. So, but I would love to have that feeling for the very first time now as an adult, because when I heard it, I was, you know, a young kid and I was still affected by it, but I don't think that I totally grasped the whole thing. It was more of what it was, what, like, you know, it was causing some type of reaction, some type of emotional response, but I wasn't sure what it was or how I was connected to it. I think now as an adult, as someone who's trying to be a better songwriter and working on their craft the best that they can, I think that would be an ultimate thing to hear again.
I recently have listened to some songs that I really liked as a kid and haven't heard in a while. And I was like, wow, I didn't even know that's what this was about.
Right. Yeah. That's the exciting thing about music. You can go back to it and get a whole different perspective on it. It's pretty, and as you start to understand more things or relate to more things in your life, you could start seeing maybe where the songwriter was coming from. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Why don't we, let's talk about why you're on the show.
Okay.
So you have a Christmas song that I'm going to play here shortly called Hold On to Christmas.
Yes.
How did that come about? Like, do you have an interesting story that you can tell us about that track? And then we'll give it a listen.
Well, I don't know if it's interesting or not. I mean, I love Christmas, favorite time of the year. The band as a whole, as the members, they enjoy Christmas. This is actually the first December that we're not on the road doing shows. The past 7 years, we've always been on the road in December. And we do this, we do a Christmas tree hunt. So we try to find as many Christmas trees that are lit up, you know, whether it's in a restaurant or in a hotel or wherever we're at, the venue, you know, and we take shots, pictures of it, you know, and we post them and stuff like that. We also do a Santa Claus hunt. 1 year we didn't find Santa Claus, but we found a picture of a picture of, I don't know, like an old time Santa Claus in one of the venues. And that was as close as we got. So we have a lot of fun with it. We had done in the past, we had done some traditional Christmas tunes, you know, and we did a heavy metal version of them. We did, you know, like Silent Night and Jingle Bells and things like that. But then what we do is we do a twist and add our own section and then go back to the main line of the song. But writing our original Christmas songs is always something that we've wanted to do and you know, and tried to work at that. So this is this year we wanted to do something that was a little more, we went in with the idea, hey, let's make it more mainstream, a little bit more poppy metal type of thing and have fun with it. I mean, that's what Christmas should be. It should be fun. It should provoke some jolliness. So even if people go, oh, that's silly, well, then we've done our job, or that's cute or adorable. You know, that's cool. So it's a fun song. It's all upbeat. You know, it's major chords, nothing too fancy. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're just trying to have fun with what we do. And it gives us an opportunity to try and different things and expand different things. And like I've told some other people, it's in a business sense, it's fantastic because we get airplay on, you know, non-metal stations and across the board all over the place because it fits the theme of these 6 weeks. So why not do it and have fun with it at the same time?
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a short break. We're going to listen to the track Hold On to Christmas from Corners of Sanctuary. We're also going to pair that up with a Pittsburgh band, a kind of pop punk called Chip and the Charge Ups. And their song is Black and Gold Christmas. You'll have to check that one out.
Okay.
And then later in the show, we're going to play a band from back in the day. They're called ZMW. They actually played my prom and their bass player was my dad's friend in high school. They have a track called Christmas Song. So those are going to be the three Christmas songs that we play on this episode, and you'll be hearing from some other local and unsigned bands as the show progresses. But for now, Hold On to Christmas by Corners of Sanctuary.
We'll be right back. back to the 412. I got all my presents bought. Mom got all the pierogies made. Put a chair in my parking spot.
It doesn't matter if that skyline sprinkled with rain or snow. As long as I can cross the bridge and get to the place that I call home.
Nothing like a black and gold Christmas. Nothing like a black and gold Christmas. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nothing like a black and gold Christmas. Oh, nothing like a black and gold Christmas. Let's go, Pens!
I like to walk the downtown streets, but if it's too slippy, then the tree that's at the point from the Inclino Station Square.
We celebrate as a melting pot with a love that's understood.
This is what Mr. Rogers called a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Up on Mount Washington. Kick it off for us, boys.
Nothing like a black and gold Christmas.
That was Corners of Sanctuary and their track Hold On to Christmas, followed up by Black and Gold Christmas by Chip and the Charge Ups and Friends. And if you're just tuning in with me, it's Mick Michaels from Corners of Sanctuary. So my next question for you, Mick, is if there's an apocalyptic event and it wipes out almost all the humans on the face of the earth and only one song from every band survives, which of your songs should survive that event?
I would think overall the song that probably would define us would be Wrecking Ball, simply because it's a song about empowerment and overcoming challenges, that, you know, obstacles that maybe life throw at you. We had used, when writing the song, we had used the boxing or a fight type of scenario, like set up to relay the sentiment of the song, but it really is, the underlying thing is overcoming these challenges, so that, you know, that you can surmount them and move on and learn from them, be stronger. You know that, what's the saying, that what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. That's kind of the idea of the song. It's a popular song. We've kept it in the set. The thing is we actually started playing the song a year before the album came out. It was on the album Metal Machine, 2015. We started playing it just about a year before. It was the only, the record company at the time allowed us only one song that we could play in the live set from the album before it released. So that was the song that we picked. It was a shorter song. It hit hard, and it seemed to really connect with the crowd. So it's definitely a staple now. So I think that's definitely an important song from the band.
Let's talk about you a little bit. When did you realize that you wanted to play guitar in a metal band?
I actually started with drums And I played drums for about 5 years. So I guess it was from like maybe 8 to 13. And it was right around that, well, 12, 13 that I started realizing that I wanted to write music. I wanted to write songs. And I tried to do it with drums. Believe me, it just never seemed to pan out the way that I was hearing it in my head. So I knew that I had to get into something else. And it didn't hurt that my older brother played guitar. So, you know, at that young age, you want to be like your older brother. So there was a gravitation towards that. And it made it easier if somebody could teach me, right? So probably around that 12, 13, as I was starting to see the world in a certain way, and I guess going through changes in myself and things like that, that I needed a better way to express some of that pent up, whatever I was, you know, young angst. I was drawn to metal because, again, like that, like with that Corners of Sanctuary song, there was an empowerment to it. And I felt that the guitar really created that empowerment more than just banging on the drums. Now, that was for me. And I'm sure there's other people that felt differently. But in the vehicle that I wanted to be a songwriter, I felt that I look at myself now as a songwriter, not really as a guitarist. I just so happened to play guitar, and it's a vehicle to help me write my songs. So that's the way my craft as a songwriter, I think, has improved over the years. However, my guitar playing probably hasn't, because I don't spend the same amount of time as I want to be a better songwriter than necessarily a technician, you know what I mean, as a guitar player. Like, I'm not really interested in ripping up and down the fretboard and stuff like that. So unfortunately, some things have probably suffered, but I'm very content with where I'm at, and I'm doing what I enjoy doing, and I feel that I'm accomplishing the things that I'm looking to accomplish, and I'm happy with that.
Having toured on several continents, is there a place that you wish you would have played, like a venue that you haven't been at yet that you want to play at?
Oh, sure. I mean, I like to get to Madison Square Garden someday. I wish that being someone from the Philadelphia area, I wish I had the opportunity to play the Spectrum. I love the Spectrum. I always loved the Spectrum. There was something there about that concrete structure. And I seen a lot of great shows down there, sporting events as well, growing up as a kid, you know, and even into adults. I seen Ringling Brothers there. I went on dates, taking somebody to the Spectrum. So I got to see a lot of cool Philly bands that came up through the ranks that played the Spectrum on one of their, you know, on their major tours and all. So it was kind of cool too. So I think that would be a place that I would, of course, no longer here, but I would have loved the opportunity to play there.
What's something that your fans would be surprised to find out about you?
I like the Bee Gees, and I like Neil Diamond. I think Barry Gibb is a great songwriter. And I know a lot of people immediately go to that, well, that falsetto voice of his and all. And listen, that was something that worked in the time, but he is an emotional type singer. He's singer and songwriter. You know what I mean? There's a lot of emotion to what he does. I think Neil Diamond's a great songwriter. I think Neil Diamond would have made a fantastic metal singer, especially in the early days of the new wave of British heavy metal. I think he would have been great. I mean, he would maybe have to learn how to do a high note, and maybe not, but he had that delivery. And a lot of metal is kind of that talking delivery type of thing with some spunk behind it.
Who would you say has supported you the most as a musician?
Besides the band members, like I said, James and I have been playing together since 85. I would say my wife, simply because when she met me, when we met each other, I was playing as a teenager and already in bands, and she never had a problem with it. You know, didn't judge me on it or anything like that. And she's been, you know, we've been together for 30 some years. So I'm very appreciative of the support that she has given me, because I don't think a lot of the stuff I would have done, or followed through maybe certain points, you know, without that kind of knowing, you have that support, you have somebody behind you that's not judging you, and it's not trying to steer you for whatever reason. And I see that a lot, unfortunately, with musicians. Their support network is tough. I mean, and to some degree, I understand where people are coming from, because if you think about it, especially from the Philly area, you know, it's a heavy blue collar area, and playing music doesn't seem like it's a job, right? Like digging ditches or laying pipe and steel and stuff like that, right? So it's a different way. It's from a different generation of looking at it. But so I think sometimes the support network for musicians is not always there, and it's tough, and it can be discouraging, and it can cause people to say, you know what, the heck with this. Let me go get a real job, whatever that means.
The more you describe the scene, the more I'm really realizing how much Pittsburgh and Philly are similar.
Only a difference of what, 5-6 hours? It's all this. You know, everybody's the same everywhere. It's just a different area. You'd be surprised. Everybody has the same wants, the same needs, the same desires. I mean, the people that we met overseas when we played, they're fantastic people. I mean, and they want to talk to you, and they want to learn about things, and they have the same fears and concerns, and the same things make them happy that probably make, you know, us happy. And it's we're not really that different. I think as a society, and not to get on a soapbox or anything, is I think we love preaching about differences, and this is different than this, and we do it this way, and we do it that way. We spend more time doing that than if we just got collectively together and talk about what's the same.
Mm-hmm.
Who cares about what the differences are? Then there'd probably be more peace in the world. I don't, you know, and I'm not a hippie, but that's not a bad way to look at life.
This is my continuing effort of being bad at segues. Tell me about an embarrassing moment your band had on stage. It could be something you did or something someone else in the band did.
Well, going back to our bass player, James, we were playing, and it was embarrassing to some degree. We're playing, we're moving around, you know, blah, 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 blah. And his pants drop. His pants just fall. And now it's you know, pants are down by the ankles. And, you know, we finished the song. I mean, but it was hilarious. Like, we've learned to laugh at ourselves too. So, I mean, as embarrassing as it is, it's also kind of funny. And it's something that we'll bring up time and time again. And it's kind of like a badge of honor now that James wears that, you know,
That brings up an interesting question.
What's that?
Where does his bass hang when he plays? Because I know bass players, some have them high, some have them low.
He wears his bass high. He wears his bass high. Yeah. So you see where I'm coming at, you know? And so it was like, but we finished the set. I did move over a bit more, and, you know, and I created some kind of blockade. Mm-hmm. I'm left-handed, he's right-handed, so there was kind of a thing that. And so I didn't have to stand exactly in front of him. I just had to kind of shift my guitar a little bit. Another time, and it's a shame, it's James. He went off the stage, got into the crowd, came back, and this is the end of the set. Like, we're finishing. Well, he's running back so he can complete what we were going to do on stage with us. He leaps over the monitor, clears the monitor without a problem. The problem is he lunged forward with his head, hits the stage, takes about two steps, and lunges off the stage head first into a pool table.
Wow.
And when he hit the ground, at the, I don't know, you can't write this stuff. at the exact same time the band had stopped the set. So it was like, bent, and he hit hard, and you heard the bass go, bent. And we're just stopping, and we're just staring there, and he's not moving. And we're like, oh, no. And then within what seemed like hours, you know, within seconds, though, he starts to move, and he's rolling back and forth, and he gets up, and he's okay. But that was a funny thing. And then that was one of the, and it's a shame because it seems like it happens to James all the time.
He's going to listen to this and be like, man, I should have went on.
Yeah.
I could have told stories about Mick.
I probably could. Yeah. Right.
Where can the people that listen to my show find your music online?
Well, it's in a lot of different places. The legitimate places, you know, you can go to iTunes and Spotify and you know, all the legitimate download places. You can stream some of our music right off our website at cornersofsanctuary.com. There's some stuff, I think, on our Facebook page as well. But you can also just Google Corners of Sanctuary, and there'll be Russian sites that come up, Czechoslovakian sites, any site you want. You can download our stuff for free, unfortunately. And you know, we actually promote that too. It's not like it's a big deal. It's part of the beast now,
and
you really can't, I mean, what are you going to do about it? You know? So we ask people, hey, listen, if you're going to share our music and give it away for free, then buy it from us first, and then do whatever you want with it. It's yours to do with it. I tell people that usually you're going to get a not so good, MP3 of the music. Because I've downloaded some myself just to hear what it's like, and it's just they're horrible. So if you're going to do it, you know, you might as well do it right. But yeah, I mean, our stuff's out there, and a lot of the stuff, and for us, and what we do is we counter it, by giving a lot of our stuff away for free as well. Like Hold On to Christmas, that's free. We have an EP coming out on the 27th. The EP is called What We Leave Behind. There's six studio tracks on there. The digital download we're giving away for free. We're doing an exclusive release through Metalheads Forever magazine, and it'll be available on their website for free until February 1st. But you can also get a CD copy of it that will also include three live tracks. So you'll get nine tracks altogether on the EP. Now that'll be something that'll be like $3-4 at the show. But that's just to cover that cost. But we give a lot of free stuff away over, you know, the course of each year.
The next easy one. Where are you guys playing coming up?
Well, we're off the rest of the year. We're doing our promotion for you know, our Hold On to Christmas and the new EP. But we are gearing up. We're going to be playing in some places throughout Pennsylvania. We always like to warm up in Pennsylvania, so we'll probably be in Philly mid-January. I know we're the 18th of January. We're up in Pittston, Pennsylvania. There is talk about us doing a Jersey show in January. I don't have that date yet. And then we'll be, as it stands now, from the 13th of March to the 20th of March, we will be in the UK. We have some shows set up there. More information is coming out about that. The whole tour isn't firmed up yet, but we're working on that. And I just got word actually yesterday that there's talk about us doing another West Coast tour. When that is, I'm not exactly sure, but that'll happen sometime this year. We're in the process of trying to finish our next album, which will probably come out late third quarter, fourth quarter of 2020.
If I played your music backwards, what would I hear?
Honestly, I don't know. I've never really spent the time listening to. I don't get into that thing. I can tell you this. One, I love Dee Snider. He was one of my favorite singers. He's a very charismatic guy. He's probably difficult to talk to because you know he's got to be top dog. But I think he's a real rags to riches story, and I think he's a definitely a go-getter and all. But in terms of our music backwards, I don't know. I don't listen to it. What I can tell you is I don't give thought to that, because I know that in the music that I write, I'm not interested in that Satan stuff or,
right.
or giving out the bad vibes or telling people to hurt themselves in any way, shape, or form. A lot of our music, we have two basic themes. We write about war and battle and what that does to people, both the soldier and the community at large. We've had a lot of, you know, a lot of our friends over the years, you know, veterans, you know, they were in the first Gulf War, second Gulf. You know, our family members, you know, fought in, you know, Vietnam and Korea and World War II. So we've heard a lot of stories and we grew up on that stuff. And this is our way of paying back to those guys. But we also write about, like I told you earlier, personal empowerment, you know what I mean? Overcoming challenges and obstacles. So I'm not really concerned about it. You can be told anything and our minds will pick that up because it has to put something tangible to something that doesn't seem, you know, so.
Well, here, let me tell you the other way that I introduced that question. When it's not a metal band, I usually say that it is the fault of a joke that I've heard, mm-hmm. which is what do you get when you play a country song backwards?
Oh.
And it's your wife comes back, your truck starts to run, your dog's alive.
There you go. I like that. That's good. See, and that's all positive.
Yes.
So that's a cool question. I'll tell you what though, we did do actually, on this EP that's coming out, we did a keyboard melody, and that we played backwards to create that, and there was a haunting tone to it. But that was for the idea of the song. But that was constructed. Now, I'm not saying that people don't construct things like that. I guess they do. It sells records, you know, especially in a time when people actually took the time to do so. And look for it.
You know? I can tell you, I've honestly never played a song backwards.
I've never either. Besides of what you heard on, you know, the Sunday Evangelist guy on TV back in the early 80s and all, I never really spent time doing that stuff. I know people that did, you know, they tried to find something or whatever the case may be, but I never had an interest in that. So I feel that if you don't give something like that power, it doesn't affect you. And there's nothing that you have to worry about.
Hey, Mick, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I actually really, really enjoyed talking to you tonight.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you having me. I enjoyed the questions. I love rapping. I'm very comfortable.
I warned you ahead of time. They're not the normal questions.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's great. That's great. Thank you so much.
All right, so this has been episode number 495 of the Pennsylvania Rock Show. Check us out each and every Friday at PARockShow.com.